Inventing America, Rockwell and Warhol is the first exhibition linking Norman Rockwell and Andy Warhol, two iconic visual communicators who embraced populism, shaped national identity, and opened new ways of seeing in the 20th century America. Original iconic artworks, processed materials and studies, archival photography, manuscripts and documents, film, video footage, and props, costumes, and personal artifacts are all on view at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, as part of the exhibit. There's also a special compendium exhibition by Warhol's nephew, James Warhol, Uncle Andy, and Other Stories. Both exhibits are on display through James 29th. Wouldn't you love that to have your own month? James 29th. No, October 29th. James Warhol is with us this morning. Wonderful to have you back on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure.
We also thank and welcome Jesse Kowalski, who is curator of exhibitions. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Stephanie Plunkett, our dear friend, deputy director and chief curator. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thrilled to be here.
Always a pleasure. Pleasure to have you on the program. Stephanie, let us begin with you of how this idea came about of bringing Rockwell and Warhol together.
Well, actually, it had been brewing for a little while. You know, Jesse and I got to know each other because he had done an exhibition of the comic book art of Alex Ross, and that was on view at the Norman Rockwell Museum a few years ago. And we began thinking about the possibility of putting these two giants of visual communication together. Both of them, as you mentioned in your opening, have had such tremendous impact on us. And, you know, Rockwell certainly as an illustrator whose work was published in by the millions on the covers and pages of American magazines. And Warhol, who began his career as an illustrator, but later went on to really change the way we think about fine art. Mm. So anyway, we had a great time with it, and it's fun to have it actually on the walls.
So that idea of inventing America, Rockwell and Warhol, what was it, the theme that you wanted to bring together, the story that you wanted to tell ultimately, Jesse?
Well, I've been at the Warhol Museum for 18 years, and so when Stephanie came up with this idea and presented it to me, I thought, you know, what a terrific idea, because she's been at the Rockwell for several years. I've been at the Warhol, so, you know, you mix the peanut butter and chocolate, and you get a great combination. So, with Warhol, you know, he was an admirer of Norman Rockwell. He had actually gone to an art gallery opening of Rockwell's works, and owned some of Norman Rockwell's artworks. And so the major themes for me were the persona of both men. Rockwell and Warhol both created this kind of persona that helped them to sell their artwork. But as Stephanie mentioned, you know, neither artist was really welcomed into the world of high art. They both started out as illustrators, and Rockwell was certainly not welcomed as a fine artist. And Warhol was actually, we talk about in the catalog, Warhol was denied an exhibition at MoMA throughout his life, but now they own his original 32 Campbell soup cans, which they call part of their greatest part of their collection. So we look at that angle as well. Both of them had interactions with celebrities in Hollywood. Of course, Warhol had a huge fascination with celebrities like Marilyn Monroe and Elizabeth Taylor, and Rockwell as well. He did this great painting for the Stagecoach poster from 1966 and other film posters as well. So really a lot of great intersections between the two men.
So in putting the exhibit together, which I just adored, I thought it was is so much fun to go through. And what I found is it's very seamless. It's not jarring as you expect that it could be. And so was it at all in putting it together, was it rather easy, not to minimize what you did, of course, but easy to find that intersection in a common place between these two iconic artists.
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the things to remember is that they had parallel careers. I mean, Rockwell obviously was a little bit older, but they were experiencing the very same things that were going on in the world. They knew who the same public figures were, the same presidents, you know, world events. Later on during the civil rights movement, they both had reaction to it. So when you start to look, even from a visual point of view, you start to see these very clear comparisons of two artists who are responding to the very same things, but in different ways. So, for example, you know, we've got in our main center gallery this wonderful comparison between Rockwell's 1943 Freedom from Want, where you see, you know, he's really sort of put a model for us of what the classic American Thanksgiving should look like. And I think probably families ever since they saw that painting have been trying to live up to that. The ready-made, you know, the carefully prepared meal right next to Warhol's Campbell soup can, which, of course, was the thing that launched him to fame, but that also represents the mid to late 20th century when, you know, the world is speeding up, people need ready-mades, and there Campbell soup is. And, of course, Warhol grew up on Campbell soup, so he understood it.
James Warhol, let's bring you into this conversation. What did you make of this idea?
Well, at first, it was an extreme kind of duet to put together. I mean, because obviously Rockwell and Warhol were at first. I thought, well, that's kind of a challenge. But in a way, I mean, what brings them together is this world of illustration, which my uncle was a part of all through the 50s. It actually made him famous, made him rich, and of course he always respected the world of illustration. In fact, a lot of people would probably say that, you know, he just continued as an illustrator, as a fine artist, but just didn't work with an art director. I got to say that it really makes you think about the two worlds of you know, how illustration works and how fine art works, and I really love it for that reason. And there are definitely a lot of interesting parallels all through the exhibit that are just wonderful in making one think.
There's moments, things very simple, like and Stephanie, I'll let you talk about this, of just the idea of cornflakes, of how you can say, okay, we're going to, this box is going to deal with cornflakes, and how you have these two perspectives.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a great central case that kind of looks at the advertising art of both of them. And as you mentioned, the cornflakes box was from the early 50s. Rockwell's got, you know, this wholesome looking child, at a time when the cereal companies realized we better put something more interesting than a bowl of cereal on the box in order to sell it. But in that very same case are these beautiful shoe drawings by Andy Warhol that were so fresh and so new and very sought after by art directors for the shoe company I. Miller. But Warhol also dealt with Kellogg's Corn Flakes in a much more, I guess, cool fashion, dealing with their logo much more so than an image.
Right. And that was certainly what we would expect from Warhol, too, right? I mean, that's also very iconic and emblematic.
Sure, yeah. In the early 60s, he did a series of boxes, Campbell's soup boxes, Heinz boxes, Brillo boxes, and there was a Kellogg's Corn Flakes box as well. These they were made out of plywood and painted with house paint. And so we have a Kellogg's Corn Flakes print that Warhol did in the late 70s. It's from his retrospective series, in which he looks back at his earlier projects. And so the Kellogg's Corn Flakes on the wall, it's in reverse and it's in black and white. So it's in stark contrast to Rockwell's painting of the smiling children.
You also have their clothes. You see what Rockwell wore to the studio. You see Warhol and the wig, which is very cool.
Yes. Oh, boy, that was very special to be able to borrow. You know, of course, I think one of the things we look at is persona. Rockwell was really known as a trustworthy, sort of humble, sought after by many American companies for that reason. But his clothes represent his style. You know, he would often wear khaki pants and maybe a corduroy shirt. If he was dressed up, maybe a bow tie, and he always had a signature pipe. Mm. But of course, Andy Warhol, as Jesse points out, sort of had a persona that evolved, but stylistically, you know, I think the wig was very much emblematic of who he was.
And you, James, have written/illustrated a lot about the wigs.
Yes, in my first illustrated and written book called Uncle Andy's for Kids, there was a little scene of how my uncle used to give us all his old wigs. He'd give them to my father because my father was also bald. And little did my uncle know that when we got home to Pittsburgh, we'd masquerade around the house in Andy's wigs. And my uncle, he definitely had wigs. We never saw him bald except my younger sister, and she popped into his room once without his wig. But in general, it became his trademark, just like Salvador Dali developed the big handlebar mustache.
Right.
And he became very recognizable. And then soon the wigs became wider and more, you know, kind of wild-looking. And that's how people recognized them in the street.
So let us talk about your space in this exhibit, which is called James Warhol, Uncle Andy and Other Stories. What was it like putting that together?
Oh, I mean, it was just kind of a spontaneous thing. I mean, Jesse and Stephanie kind of contacted me about the show, but I didn't realize they were going to include that many pieces of mine, and here became this wonderful little room exhibit, which I'm very honored to be at the Rockwell Museum. I mean, it's every illustrator's dream to probably show in a museum is of that caliber that honors illustration, and I'm thrilled. I mean, it's really because I've been doing illustration for almost 40 years. I've gone from science fiction to Mad Magazine, to, you know, Garbage Pail Kid cards. Right. I mean, I've done a little of everything. But to be honored in that space alongside my uncle is a thrill. I mean, I've never had so much fun talking to people, and I've given a few talks there at the museum. So it's been fantastic.
It is fascinating to go through the exhibit and then go through and see James's work. Because even there, you see the connection, don't you?
Oh, very much so. And I just love the story that his uncle actually advised him not to be an illustrator. But James spent a lot of time with his uncle as he was growing up. And I think, I'm sure watching that artistic process was very inspirational. But he's an exceptional artist. His style can swing depending upon what he's working on, from, you know, highly realistic, beautifully fantastical, to you know, just wonderful, fanciful, humorous. So he is just a wonderful artist, and I'm sure your uncle would have been incredibly proud of you.
Oh, thank you. I often tell people, you know, even though my uncle influenced me to become an illustrator because I used to watch him illustrate shoes, I'm much more Rockwell in kind of personal taste. So I love a sense of humor. I love storytelling with my illustrations. I never was so, like, on the edge avant-garde as my uncle was. So that's why it's another reason I'm very happy to be at the Rockwell.
Well, first of all, the work as a kid growing up, I mean, those Garbage Pail Kids, that is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. I should say that, you know, I worked with Art Spiegelman on those, and I was one of the three artists that worked on those back in the mid-80s, and it was like we never knew that they would turn into what they did, which was kind of a national, I don't know what, but a lot of teachers and parents were upset with them. But
that's because they were all over desks and refrigerators and cars.
Yes, yes.
And you resisted working on them at first.
Oh, right? I didn't really want to work on them. They were so obnoxious. But I kind of did one, and then they liked it, and then I kind of got a thrill out of it. So I did about 100 more of those things. So.
And does that, excuse me for asking this crass question, but does that pay well?
Well, actually, you know, they paid $400 a piece at the time, yeah. and that was pretty good money then. Actually, they kept the artwork. Topps Bubblegum did those.
Yeah.
And then they resold the artwork later on. So that was their, they made a profit on us.
Oh, that seems weaselly. That seems weaselly. And then the Mad Magazine work, too.
Yeah.
You're wearing a Mad Magazine cap now. I mean, has to be a love, too.
They kind of call me out of a retirement every once in a while to do a project. And I think recently I did a couple paintings with a Trump theme. So I still enjoy working for them. And a lot of people don't realize Mad Magazine still gets published. I mean, you don't see it that often.
Oh, I just saw it, yeah, with the Trump issue and fold-in and everything else.
Yeah, yeah. It's just that, you know, the circulation is way down, and they're just hanging in there. But they still do great satire, parody. They're actually, you know, kind of a landmark in the whole world of humor.
A couple of pieces I want to talk about specifically in the collection. One is Closing Up a Summer Cottage. This is a photograph. I didn't know that this existed. It was done, I guess, for Eastman Kodak as an advertisement, but looks like a Rockwell painting, but was a Rockwell photograph. You have it lit in a beautiful box, and it's stunning.
Yes. The interesting thing about that, excuse me, is that is actually Rockwell's only photographic illustration. He was contacted, as you said, by Kodak to do, if you remember, a colorama. That was the 60-foot-long backlit transparency in Grand Central Station. And he worked just as he normally would. This was actually in eastern Long Island in Quogue. He went out, he found his models, he set up his storyline. And so it is really a Rockwell illustration, the only photographic one. But the actual photograph was taken by Ralph Amadursky for Kodak.
Very cool. As far as some of the other things you have in the exhibit, and I assume you work together, but there's the video footage of the interviews of these two artists is fascinating as well, Jesse.
Oh, sure. We've got Warhol on Merv Griffin, as well as a video of Rockwell on Merv Griffin. But the one about Warhol's great because he presents his persona in the 1960s of this effete New York intellectual artist, and he doesn't actually answer Merv's questions. Merv asks Edie Sedgwick, Warhol's ingenue, the questions, and then Warhol answer it to her, and then she'll answer the questions. So he created this persona of mystique that just drawed people to him.
It was really fun to watch.
Yeah,
and then am I making this up? Then there's Rockwell with David Frost as well, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Which is fascinating, too.
Yes. I mean, I think Rockwell always presented a very down-home persona. Never aggrandized his own work, but, you know, sometimes would even bring original paintings on shows to talk about. In one of the interviews, he actually brought a print of The Problem We All Live With, which is actually on view in the exhibition.
For both, I guess I can ask both of you about this. So choosing the particular pieces that would represent Warhol, that would represent Rockwell, was that a, did those come very naturally, or was it kind of a head scratcher as to which one and which ones?
Well, there were certain pieces where we could immediately see the comparison jump out. And so those were the ones that we immediately placed on our list. And, of course, we don't own any Andy Warhol art, so all of that was loaned to us by either private collections or by museums. And we have some wonderful archival objects from the Andy Warhol Museum. So I think Jesse and I were, you know, in a certain way at our respective museums. We're lucky to have him at the Rockwell Museum now, but when he was at the Warhol, he was there for 18 years, and I'm now at Rockwell for 21 years. So I think it sort of was not too hard for us to put those together.
Yeah, it was really kind of narrowing down the choices.
Yeah.
I think it really started with a painting that Rockwell did of Tyrone Power. It was the poster for A Razor's Edge, and Tyrone Power's in this business suit, a typical 50s male. And from my experience at the Warhol, I knew that Warhol did these male fashion figure models from the 1950s. And just looking at the Tyrone Power, the stance of the two men, the suit, the way they hold themselves, it was just identical, you know. And I wonder if Warhol got that from Rockwell, or if that was just kind of the contemporary male that Rockwell established in the 1950s. But that was the first thing that the first comparison that we found.
And what is the reaction from museum goers been so far?
You know, I think it's very much what James described. You know, they say, Rockwell and Warhol, what's going on there? But I think then when they come to see the exhibition, it becomes very clear and people have had a very positive reaction.
Yeah, with me, on the tours, I start out asking people what their preconceived notions of Warhol are. And generally, you know, not too great sometimes, but, you know, people think he was, you know, a certain kind of person.
Yeah.
And then I like to reveal that he was actually a devout Catholic who went to mass every day. And he lived with his mother in New York. They lived together for 20 years. You know, so he presented this persona, but he was actually quite a different person, as James can attest. So.
And Rockwell, by contrast, was raised a strict Episcopalian, and later in life he kind of stepped away from organized religion himself, even though he was a great humanist.
And I assume, I can't even imagine the questions you get, James.
Well, for one thing, a lot of people don't make the connection because my uncle dropped the A.
Right.
Of course, I start with that when I'm giving a talk. I say, well, my name's Warhola because that's what Andy's name was. It was Andrew Warhola. And when he came to New York, he dropped the A. But, yeah, I get a lot of, statements about my uncle. I mean, we knew him at home on a kind of a family level. He never really brought anybody from the studio or the factory back to the house. Very rarely somebody would ever meet his mother. He kept those two worlds apart. So in a way, when he left the house after saying a prayer with my grandmother, because she always insisted he, you know, say a prayer before you go out onto the street, he would have this, you know, he'd be entering a whole new world with, you know, artists, poets, filmmakers, all the people that are on the creative edge of through the 60s and the 70s. I mean, he was really, it was kind of an amazing contrasting world of his home life and his factory world, so to speak.
Well, the exhibit and both exhibits are beautiful. They're on display at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, now through October 29th. You can find out more information about Inventing America, Rockwell and Warhol, and James Warhola, Uncle Andy and Other Stories, by going to nrm.org for more information, nrm.org for more information. My thanks to James, Stephanie, and Jesse. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.